طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This is your host, John Roberts. 20% of the citizens of the State of Israel are Palestinian. In 1948, most of the Palestinian population were forced out of the territory that eventually became the State of Israel, but not all. Those who remain live in an apartheid, discriminatory state, second-class citizens by law, unable to access all rights and benefits of the Jewish citizen population. Israel claims it is a democracy largely based on the fact that the Arab-Palestinian population can and does have elected representatives in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. But it is a minuscule minority with little, if any, power, a token representation at its best. However, despite this rigged game, there are some Palestinians who feel that they need to use all platforms available to them to maintain their resistance, including the Knesset. Today we feature an Arab-Palestinian who is one of those few who are elected members of the Knesset, Sami Abu Shehadeh. He is joined in conversation with Dr. Edmund Garib, professor at American University in Washington, D.C.
It's a pleasure having Mr. Abu Shehadeh here with us today. He is, as Firas mentioned, he's one of the leading Palestinian members of the Knesset. And he's someone who has often been accused by Zionists of being an extremist. He has supported, actually, because of his challenges to the Israeli Zionist mindset and his emphasis on Palestinian rights and on equality and justice for the Palestinian people. And what's even more interesting from what I've heard about him is that he also not only speaks fluent Arabic and English, but he also speaks fluent Hebrew, and he often debates his Israeli critics in Hebrew and the Knesset. We are delighted to have you, and thank you for being with us today. I think this is going to be a very interesting session, and welcome to you in the audience. We welcome your questions also, so please do not hesitate to ask any questions you like, as long as it's related to the topic that we're talking about today. Mr. Abu Shehadeh, please begin if you want to speak for about 10, 15 minutes, and then I have some questions, and then we'll open it to the audience.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Garib, for this important chance to talk to your honorable audience. I would like to concentrate my 10 minutes to a little bit bring to the minds of the audience the forgotten 1.7 million Palestinians who are the citizens of Israel. Unfortunately, when usually talk to foreign audience, most of the audience, either they don't know anything about the existence of 20% of the Israeli citizens, 1.7 million Palestinians, or if they do know, they do know very little about our existence and our issues. So I would like to concentrate my few minutes on the Arab-Palestinian citizens of the State of Israel. Usually most of the world, when they think about Israel-Palestine, They think in two different separated geographies or two pieces of geography. And they think that the Palestinians are living in the area which is called nowadays Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. And the Jews lives inside the Green Line. And this is what usually people think or know more or less. But we are living in the state of Israel as a minority. We were not a minority before the Nakba. Before the Palestinian Nakba, we were the majority in our homeland. The state of Israel actually was built on the ruins of our homeland and of our people. And we became a minority in our homeland as a result of the 1948 war, as a result of the Nakba. The Arab-Palestinian minority in Israel suffers from all different kinds of racial policies and of discrimination in all fields of life. Everything that you can check in numbers in the state of Israel, you can see huge gaps between the Jewish majority and the Arab-Palestinian minority. Don't want to make you too tired with details and numbers, but in Israel, racism and discrimination is something you can see just by driving your car from one place to the other. You can see racism all over, wherever you are going, in the south, in the Naqab area, in the Naqab desert, or in the central area, in cities like Yafa, Lid, Ramle, or if you go to the Triangle area, or you go to the north, wherever you pass with your car in the state of Israel, and you pass from a Jewish area to the Arab area, you don't need anyone telling you anything. You can see with your own eyes the differences and the gaps between the Palestinian minority and the Jewish minority, who are both considered citizens of the state of Israel. The insistence of the Israeli state to see itself as a Jewish state or the state of the Jewish people is mainly our biggest challenge. This Jewish supremacy that the vast majority of all the Zionist parties wants to keep here in this part of the world has developed into a kind of a legitimate racism. Because unfortunately, because this time in their history, the Jews are not the victims of racism, but the victimizers here in this part of the world. Most of the world don't want to see this simple fact. We in my party, in my any political movement, we see the term Jewish democracy as an oxymoron. We don't see these two things going together. We see that the two terms contradict each other. And we believe that it cannot exist as a Jewish and democratic state in the same time. Israel cannot be both in the same time, because as long as they want to see themselves as a Jewish state, it means they want to give more to part of the population on the account of the other part of the population. And this is what's happening here in Israel. In all fields of life, the state of Israel gives more to the Jewish majority and ignores the existence of the Palestinian minority. Sometimes they deal with us as enemies, as you have seen in the late May 2021 events, where the state was shooting us in demonstrations. Or sometimes they deal with us as low-class citizens in different issues. Inside the state of Israel, Arab Palestinians and Jews live on total racial separation. Nearly 90% of the population in the state of Israel lives on racial separation. I don't know if there's a similar case, by the way, nowadays in anywhere in the world where 90% of the population lives on total racial separation. Tel Aviv is the most famous enlightened is a city in Israel, nearly don't have Arab population. But other big cities like Rishon LeZion, Cholon, Ramat Gan, Givatayim is 100% Jewish. Less than 10% of the population lives in what is called mixed cities, where I live in cases like Yafa, Haifa, Akka, Lod, Ramle, less than 10%. But also inside these mixed cities, you can also see racial separation. My children and my neighbor's children go to different schools. We live in the same building, but our children go to different schools. There is separation in the official separation in the education system in Israel. So you see racism and discrimination in everything that you can check. You can see the numbers in everything, in the academy, in different universities, in the economic section. You can see what's happening in banking, politics, culture, sports, everything. And we see that there's a very big problem, challenge for us as a Palestinian minority. And my party, the Balad Party, we brought a solution for this challenge. Our solution is to make Israel a normal democracy. This is why, Dr. Gharib, this is why we are considered very extreme in Israel. Because we fight for justice and equality for all, making Israel, instead of being a racist Jewish state that prefers part of the population on the other part of the population, because we are struggling for justice and equality for all, to change the political system into a normal democracy, a state that would deal with you as a citizen. Now, whether if you pray like a Jew or you pray like a Christian or a Muslim, you don't pray at all, it's your problem between you and God. Your rights as a citizen should not be given to you because you pray in a certain way or your grandfather used to pray in a certain way in Ukraine in the 19th century. Now, we are challenging this racist component of the political regime in Israel that prefers Jews on the other part of on our account, the indigenous community. And we believe that Israel should become the state of all its citizens. Simply a normal democracy, which is built on justice, equality, and human rights for all the citizens. Because of that, we are challenging the Zionist component of the state. We are considered the most extreme political party in Israel. And we are accused all the time of being extreme and so on. Meanwhile, unfortunately, you said, Annie, that a lot of people talks about the Palestinian partner for the peace talks. I think there is a Palestinian partner. I think the problem is that there is no Israeli partner from the Zionist parties that believes in justice and equality for all. And this is our biggest challenge. Now we face this in our daily life, in our daily work as members of the Israeli Knesset. But I will stop here my talk to you. And if you have any questions, we can address the questions. And in the end, if I feel something missing, I can when I summarize my talk, I will bring all the other things.
Thank you so much. This is a very thoughtful and wide-ranging analysis for 10 minutes or thereabouts. So thank you very much. I was originally going to start actually by focusing a little bit on President Biden's visit, but let me go actually to the topic that you just spoke about, which I think is the core issue right now that I would like to start with. As you know, American politicians often and friends of Israel and the U.S. keep emphasizing that Israel is a democracy, is the only democracy in the Middle East. Well, I would like to ask, is Israel a democracy? From what you've said, it doesn't seem to be that way. Why not? And is it, in fact, only a democracy for the Jewish population of Israel? Why is it that whenever, if this is the case, then the issue of, or the criticism that we hear sometimes from some voices in the West, that Israel is an apartheid state, and those people who raise that are often denounced fiercely. Could you go a little bit more into this issue and how is Israel a democracy? Is it, in some ways, it appears to be a democracy, especially for the Jewish community. But when it comes to the Palestinian Israelis, that may be a different story.
Well, thank you, Dr. Gharib. Israel calls itself a Jewish democracy. It's a kind of a democracy for the Jews, but for us, the indigenous community, it's a Jewish state. For us, it's a Jewish state. For them, it might be a democracy, but I don't think that the two things can go together, because Israel was established on the account, on the ruins of the Palestinian people, and most of its population till now lives in a state of mind of denial that in order to build this Jewish state, the Palestinians passed a serious Nakba that totally crushed the Palestinian people and destroyed our dream for a nation state. And it's continuing since 1948 till now. But I think before getting into too much detail, just by definition, a Jewish democracy can never be a normal democracy. A state that prefers people or part of its population because they were born from the majority point of view to the right race. On the other part of the population that from the majority point of view was born for the wrong race can never bring equality between its citizens. By definition, there is no chance for equality for us inside this state. And Israel, imagine this very complex situation. Israel says that this state is state for all the Jews all over the world, which means that the majority of the citizens in this part of the world are citizens in potential. They are living abroad. And so Israel is a state for a lot of people who are not its citizens. They live as American citizens, European citizens, Australian citizens, Jews all over the world. But in the same time, it is not the state of all its citizens because we are not Jewish. We are Palestinians. Now, this makes it impossible for such an entity to and also on by definition or in theoretical level to be a democracy, but not just in theory, Dr. Gharib. If you check the numbers, in anything that you want to do comparison between Arabs and Jews, living as citizens inside this state, there are 60 laws that discriminate against the Arab-Palestinian minority who are citizens of the state of Israel. You can check, we have an important legal NGO, it's called Adala. If you check their website, you can see all the list of more than 60 laws that discriminates against the Arab-Palestinian minority who are citizens of the state of Israel. If we take just, for example, few important laws, and like in any state in the world, the most important law is citizenship. We have discrimination in citizenship. All Jews can be citizens whenever they like to. Okay? They can return after, according to their story, after 2,000 years in exile. My family, that was expelled in 1948, my family, my own family, they can't get back because they were born to the wrong race from the state point of view. If you see the last racist, a nation state law that Israel made in 2018 that totally ignores our existence and our collective rights here, says that Israel is only a nation state for the Jews. If you see the last law before we went to the elections a few weeks ago that passed in the Israeli Knesset, is called the Committee Acceptance Law. This is a law that wants to prevent Arab Palestinians from living in Jewish areas. So the law says that in certain areas, only Jews are allowed to live. And in order to go and buy a house there, you should pass an acceptance committee. And the acceptance committee has certain terms in order to accept you to live in that area. One of the terms says that you should be suitable culturally for the people who are living there. I don't know if there are such laws in anywhere now in the world. In Israel, we have racist laws that exist from the 19th century colonial world. I don't know if they... And the last thing I want to tell you, Ani, about any Jew in the world can come to Israel and immediately become a citizen, get married with any Jewish girl or a boy, whatever he likes. I am not allowed to get married or to be in love with a girl from Ramallah, 60 kilometers far from Yaffa, and bring her to live with me. Arab-Palestinian families, there's a law that prevents us from family unifications in Israel. And nobody sees this racism. The fact that the state wants to decide for me with whom to be in love, with whom not to be in love, does not look bad in the Jewish majority minds. Such a state could never be a democracy. I think most of the supporters of Israel that talks about Israel, this myth of the only democracy in the Middle East, don't know anything about how does our life look like as citizens inside the state. I wish they would come for a visit and just pass with their car from one place to the other and see what I am talking about. I think most of the support comes from things that got nothing to do with the Israeli reality. And this is what really has a lot of the world important human rights NGOs has discovered lately. In the last 2 years, with this, I'm going to finish this and answer to your question, Dr. Gharib. Something very big and important happened. In the last 2 years, 5 different reports from different NGOs, different institutions, very important ones, says that Israel is an apartheid state. Now, it started with an Israeli human rights NGO, by the way, B'Tselem. And then we had another very important report by the Human Rights Watch, very important NGO that talks about human rights. Then we had another very important report from Amnesty International. Then another very important report from Harvard, Human Rights Clinic in the Law School of Harvard. And then another independent report from the UN. In 2 years, 5 different reports from very important institutions says that this is an apartheid, what's happening on there. I wish those who are supporting Israel would read at least one of these reports to see how does this political entity works in all of historical Palestine, not just in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, but also towards its own population, its own Arab-Palestinian citizens. And you can see a lot of proofs that say that this is not a democracy and Israel is very far from being a democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Why do you think Western governments look the other way, as you were just pointing out to these reports that just came out? They seem to look the other way or are blind when it comes to injustices and human rights violations committed against the Palestinians. You were recently in the United States and you spoke with a number of Americans as well as Palestinians and people of different backgrounds. I don't know if you've raised this question with them. How much of it do you think maybe it has to do with the Israel lobby, with the strong support of the lobby for members of Congress? And how do you think this is likely to change? What can be done? I mean, what are you doing first on the ground inside Israel to bring about change? And how has the Israeli community. For example, one interesting, one curious thing for me, I would like, do you get Jewish voters to vote for you, for example? Do Arab Palestinians in Israel who are in the Knesset, do they get Israeli voters to vote for them? Or is it only basically Arab Palestinians who vote for them? And how are we likely to see change as a result of this? I mean, you have been recently there. You were an activist before you joined, became a member of the Knesset. Do you think that your experience in the Knesset, you know, gives you a different view, a different light on what's going on and what could be done?
Okay, we have three different questions. First of all, regarding the Western blind support of Israel and continuing to sue Israel as a democracy, this comes from a lot of different reasons. In the States, it's different than in Europe. States in the United States, it's a little bit different because of religious reasons and also because of cultural reasons. I think that in the vast public opinion, American public opinion thinks that Israel is a microcosm of their own experience, of the American experience, of people immigrating from Europe to the undeveloped areas of the world and building there a democracy and so on and so on. This is why they have a lot of support. I think most of this support comes out of ignorance. And this is why I think we as Palestinians, we have the interest that the world would know the truth. I think by bringing our perspective to the world, they will see Israel in a totally different way. They are going to see it from the victim's point of view of the Zionist project and its evils. This is totally different. Part of the support of the Western world is also because the Western world is racist. And they don't care much about non-Europeans who are suffering. It doesn't mean, and I usually ask this question to the ambassadors of different Western states. I tell them, you see everything here. You come here, you see everything. You see the gaps and the discrimination and you see the separation wall, and you see that Gaza is under siege for a long time, and you see racist policies in all fields of life, and you see the occupation and people getting killed daily. You see all this. Why aren't we seeing changes in your policies? They tell me, yes, Sammy, we see, and we send reports to our states. But first of all, there's strong Zionist lobbies in the different Western states that brings a totally different narrative. Second, they started much before than we did. So we are, they were able to construct the public opinion. It's much more difficult to change the public opinion. But things are changing. Things are changing, and people are starting to see any different things. I think the best way is to bring the Palestinian narrative, which is my point of view, much closer to the truth, to the world, to let them understand what does it mean to live in such a Jewish democracy. How does this affect our lives in all different parts of Palestine? This is the way to do it, but it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time because you are not telling a new story for them. The people knows already something which is far from the truth in our point of view. So we are aiming at changing their opinions. This will take more time. And I think the more people would know about Israel, the more we are going to see how Israel will be brought out of the democratic club. Now, regarding our voters, we have very small Jewish minority that supports our project in Balad Party or in the Communist Party. But I have to say that this minority are very special people. We are talking about few thousands, But this few thousands are really, we have very high respect to them, because they are working in a very complicated situation. And the vast majority of the Jews deals with them as someone that crossed the borders to the other side. Jews who are a political activist in the state of Israel and they support our struggle for justice and equality are a small minority, but great people that are ready to pay very high price for their beliefs and for their struggle for justice and equality. Because their families, their neighbors start dealing with them as people who crossed the borders to the other side. So they pay much higher price than I do. So we have very high respect for them. For your last question regarding, as a member of the Knesset, where do I see a change? If there's a possibility for change. Well, I think that the Israeli Jewish society has been deteriorating very fast in the last two decades for becoming a fascist society. It's getting used to violence. And most of the voters, the vast majority, are in the right and the extreme right. We are also seeing different components of a fascist regime, like making Netanyahu a god of their own, and the way they are dealing with their leader, and they are narrowing a lot the what could be dealt with as a democratic margins. And there's a lot of attacks on the legal institutions of the state and on the Israeli Supreme Court. And so things are becoming much more dangerous in the state of Israel. But this should not make us pessimistic. And on the contrary, this says that our political activity is becoming much more important, because you need someone that would stop this deterioration towards fascism and towards violence. And you need a political trend, political movement that would open a different horizon for the population, to tell the people that there's a different solution, which is built on justice and equality for all, that we aim at changing this racist situation into a more democratic situation. We don't see a lot of hope in the coming next few years, but we are aware of that. We are seeing the change, and we are trying to stop this fascist deterioration and to open a democratic horizon for the population. Sounds weird in this very complicated situation, but this is our main political work.
Well, that's fascinating. And one of the interesting things is that, as you pointed out earlier, first of all, the Palestinian issue, despite all of what's been going on, is not as well known as people think. There are also a lot of stereotypes. But when it comes even to Palestinians in Israel, there is less known about them than about the other. And Palestinians in Israel were seen at one time as one of the quietest Palestinian communities. But in the last couple of years or so, it seems, or few, maybe even the last decade or so, we're seeing more activism on the part of this community. To what do you attribute? First of all, is this true? And secondly, to what do you attribute this change that's taking place? How are the political dynamics affecting this new attitude or this new situation?
Well, you reminded me was a very important work done by Professor Eyal Lustig. I think he's Jewish American, by the way. I'm not sure. I think he's Jewish American or Canadian. He came to visit Israel at the end of the 1980s. And he passed from one place to the other. He was visiting the state. Then he saw discrimination and racism towards the Arab Palestinian minority in everything that he has seen. So he came up with a very important research. He works a lot on different minority issues. So his main question was that, why is this minority so quiet? If Israel claims being a democracy, and there is discrimination and racism towards the Arab Palestinians in all fields of life, why are all these Palestinians so quiet? And his main explanation was, and I feel it still exists, that first of all, between 1948 and 1966, Israel dealt with us as enemies. We were living under military control. We, Arab Palestinian citizens, inside the state of Israel, for two decades, we were living under military control. But after that, officially, they took up the military control, they continued with another kind of political regime, which is built on control and surveillance that still exists till today. For example, let me give you a few basic things. We, the Arab Palestinians, Israel do not acknowledge our national identity. From the state point of view, we do not have a national identity. We are only just small religious minorities. When I am telling you now that we are Palestinians, from the state point of view, I am lying to you. Because there are no Palestinian people in the official narrative. Our children, for example, are not allowed to study our history in the Israeli schools. Our children are examined on modern Zionist history, and they are not allowed to study Palestinian history. We study in our schools most of the topics in Hebrew, not in Arabic. For a lot of reasons. We don't have one official TV channel, for example. One official radio channel. Okay, I'm talking about 2022. We don't have an Arab university. So this minority, compared to its objective situation, is a very, very quiet minority. We are trying to struggle and change our future using different tools and political activity, which is considered legal and legitimate. It is a very quiet minority. Lately, people are knowing about us more, mainly because of the social media that got into the world. So you see us not only in the official TV channel or official radio channels. You can watch our activity through the social media. And also, I think that the Palestinian people has rediscovered this Palestinian minority lately. So they know about us a little bit more, but still, we are not doing enough. That the people would know more about us and about our issues and about our sufferings and so on. And it's taking some time because we don't see the Israeli foreign policies representing our interests and our voices. So we don't want to be part of the Israeli Hasbara. So and we work with very, very small resources. So things are taking us more time. It's very slow.
Yeah, actually, let me ask you a question about since you raised about students, for example. Is Palestinian history taught in any of the schools? I mean, do you see, for example, that or is it just simply teaching of Zionist history or Israeli Jewish history?
There's an atmosphere of terror and fear, Dr. Gharib, in our education system. Let me give you a personal example. I finished my PA at the end of the 1990s, and I taught for 1 year in my school, which is a private school. It's a Catholic church school. It's called Terra Santa. And I taught for 1 year history and political science. Now, the curriculum made me teach the Zionist narrative and Zionist history. But on the same time, I was telling the students also the Palestinian narrative. So after a few months, my headmaster brought me to a meeting and told me, Sammy, I had orders from the above, as if God was talking to him, that if next year you will be teaching in my school, I will have problems in my budget. And he brought me out of school because I was telling the Palestinians that they are Palestinians, that they should know their history. Now, this is how the state is running a terror atmosphere at schools. So people know very little about their own history.
I mean, this is fascinating, in fact. And, you know, that reminded me of something you mentioned earlier about the Palestinians living under military rule for a long time. Netanyahu at one time said that he considers the Palestinians in Israel, the 20% that you were talking about, that they pose more of a strategic threat to Israel than the Palestinians in the West Bank or Gaza. That's very interesting. Why do you think so? From what you're saying, it's very interesting that they don't want even the students to learn their history. And they have, there is this kind of almost trying to eradicate the Palestinian presence. I mean, at least if not in reality, at least in education and other areas. So why does someone like Netanyahu, did he ever explain that? Why did he consider the Palestinians inside as posing more of a threat, strategic threat, than those in the West Bank or Gaza?
You know, Dr. Gharib, I think the problem is not Netanyahu. You know, when Netanyahu said this famous sentence that he deals with us as the biggest strategic threat for the Jewish state. In the same day, there was a very important discussion between two very important figures in the Israeli Zionist politics. Dr. Yossi Beilin, presenting the extreme left, and Lieberman, presenting the extreme right. They were brought for important talk show in Israel, and he asked them, what do they think about this sentence that at that time Netanyahu saying that we are a big strategic threat for the state? So Lieberman came ready to the talk show, brought out the map. He said, I was saying this much before Netanyahu, and we should expel these people, or we should transfer them from the Israeli state to the Palestinian state if they don't accept, all this racist way of thinking. What did Mr. Extreme Left say, Dr. Yossi Beilin? He said that he agrees with Netanyahu and Lieberman on the problem. He disagrees on the solution, which means that there's a kind of consensus between all the Zionists that we are a problem. Our existence is a problem. Okay, the fact that we bring children to the world is a problem. Okay, in the Israeli political discourse, they call my children demographic bomb. Now, they don't know what will be the future of my children. But my Naji and my Sama, because they were born to the wrong race, are considered a demographic bomb. My neighbor's children are called a blessing. The fact that Jews bring children to the world is called a blessing. Hit barachnu, they say in Hebrew. Hit barachnu with the birth of ex-Jewish children. And our children is considered a demographic bomb.
No.
And you, this is crazy, but this is facts in Israel. This is how they deal with us. So the issue is not Netanyahu. The issue, Dr. Gharib, in my point of view, is that Zionism is like other settler colonial projects. All settler colonial projects wanted to eradicate the indigenous population. The Israelis were not able to kill as much as they would have loved to do. So they are doing it differently. They are destroying our heritage. They are destroying our culture. There was a few months ago, the heritage minister in Israel, Elkin, was on the radio, and they were asking him about different kinds of that got to do with heritage and Arab-Palestinian heritage or so on. So he said to the interviewer, "What are you talking about? The goals of the heritage ministry is only to keep and develop Jewish heritage. This is the goal of the ministry. The other heritages that exist in this very old, important part of the world are not important. They don't deserve to be preserved or developed. They are continuing till today trying to destroy our identity. The fact that I am telling you that I'm a Palestinian, from their point of view, is considered something extreme to do.
In fact, Palestinians are said to be Israeli Arabs. They don't say Palestinian for living.
Yeah, we are called the Arabs of Israel, as if Israel has its own Arabs, you know. And because we are the Arabs of Israel, our history starts after 1948. Before 1948, we don't have history. Our history, according to their narrative, starts with the existence of the establishment of the Israeli state. Our history before is not considered at all. And they don't also explain why is my cousin, for example, who was expelled in 1948, he is a Palestinian, but I am not at the same time.
We have to leave it there. You've been listening to a conversation with Palestinian representative in the Israeli Knesset, Sami Abu Shahadeh, and Dr. Edmund Gharib, professor at American University in Washington, D.C. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at WZBC 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time and on kkrn.org, where you can stream us live every Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.